We are in the process of trying to transition from the Old Testament books of the Bible to the New Testament books of the Bible. We're in a period that some people refer to as the silent 400 years. Now, it's not totally silent. What they mean by that is that we have no inspired historical books from this time period. Book of Daniel makes very precise predictions about some of the events during this time period, but there's no historical follow-up. So we do have some uninspired writings by Jews that helps us see what happened during this time period. Specifically, I'm thinking about 1st Maccabees and 2nd Maccabees. They're not sequential. That's just to help distinguish between the two of them. They talk about the same time period. We have the writings of the Antiquities of the Jews by Josephus, a first century historian who was a priest and also a Pharisee. But these are not inspired documents, so we have to understand that some of the material in them are not altogether accurate. And sometimes you can even see where they have direct contradictions to inspired information that we have. And of course, when that happens, you always prefer the inspired source of Scripture. So we had worked our way up yesterday to the rise of the really wicked player of the 2nd century BC, and that would be Antiochus IV. So in 175 BC, when his older brother was assassinated, and his young nephew of 10 years of age was serving as a treaty hostage in Rome, Antiochus just simply declares himself to be the new king of the Macedonian or Greek Empire based out of Antioch, Syria. And the next year, we see him approached by a Jewish man that wants to be his new best buddy in relationship to the Jewish people. Now, I use that tongue in cheek because we knew that something was happening amongst the Jews around this time that I was referencing yesterday. And that is, we're getting a split as to how to proceed into the future. There are many Jews, the high priest at this time, that wanted to remain true to the Word of God, to remain faithful to the traditions. But there was a growing segment of the population that wanted to throw off the law of Moses and the traditions of the centuries and to become just part of the Greek world. And 1st Maccabees summarizes some of that in this way. This is from 1st Maccabees 1, 11 through 15. In those days, certain renegades came out from Israel and misled many, saying, "Let us go and make a covenant with the Gentiles around us, for since we separated from them, many disasters have come upon us." And this proposal pleased them, and some of the people eagerly went to the king, that's a reference to Antiochus, who authorized them to observe the ordinances of the Gentiles. And so this is where things start falling apart. Much of the Jewish society wants to Hellenize. That means become like the Greeks, because the Greeks refer to themselves as Hellenoi. And the key player in this shift is a man who is related to the high priest. I believe he's his brother. His name, his circumcised name, is Joshua, or as the Greek text often says, Jesus. But he abandons that Hebrew heritage and embraces a Greek name, Jason. And this is what happened next. Let me read to you from 2 Maccabees chapter 4, verse 7. When Seleucus died and Antiochus, who is called Epiphanes, succeeded to the kingdom, Jason, the brother of Onias, obtained the high priesthood by corruption, promising the king at an interview 360 talents of silver. Each talent is about 6,000 days' wages, so you're talking about millions of dollars here. And from another source of revenue, 80 talents. In addition to this, he promised to pay 150 more if permission were given to establish by his authority a gymnasium and a body of youth for it, and to enroll the people of Jerusalem as citizens of Antioch. Now, you might remember that the Treaty of Apamea had put the Greek kingdom of the Seleucids into a cash crunch. They had to pay lots of war reparation money to the Romans every single year. And so this idea of a Jewish high priest promising millions of dollars if he could be the official high priest, that would have been quite welcome into the coffers of the Greek kingdom. And so what's he asking for it? He just wants to be high priest, and in return, he will start helping the people become more Greek. In fact, he wants to build this gymnasium, this place where Greek cultural things are done in the nude, and that the young people would be encouraged to be members of this gymnasium society, and that some of the people, a lot of the leadership of Jerusalem, would then be granted full Greek citizenship status within the Antioch kingdom. And this was granted. It says, when the king assented, Jason came to office. He at once shifted his compatriots over to the Greek way of life. So he starts pushing this idea harder and harder and harder. We Jews have got to quit being so different than everybody else. We need to start being more Greek-like. The first Maccabees passage that I was reading earlier says that not only did they build this gymnasium, that they also started removing the marks of circumcision and abandoning other elements of the Holy Covenant. And they joined with the Gentiles and sold themselves to do evil. So we don't know how they did it, but there was some sort of circumcision reversal procedure. Because they don't want to be identified as different at the gymnasium. And so this is what's happening in Jewish society right around 174, 175 BC. Let me describe a little bit more of what was happening under this new high priest named Jason. It says, he took delight in establishing a gymnasium right under the citadel, and he induced the noblest of the young men to wear the Greek hat. Greek hat was a status symbol amongst the Greeks of that time. You can see it in some of the ancient representations of Greeks from this period. And so Jews are now starting to wear that same Greek hat. But this idea that he put a gymnasium right under the citadel. The citadel of that period was probably where the Tower of Antonia was in the first century of the Christian era, during the time of Jesus and the apostles. And that was right on the northwest corner of the Temple Mount, expanded by Herod. So the gymnasium, we know for a fact, was only a matter of a few hundred feet from the temple worship area. Why is that important? Because of the next part of the story. Listen to this, verse 13. There was such an extreme of Hellenization and increase in the adoption of foreign ways because of the surpassing wickedness of this Jason, who was ungodly and no true high priest, that the priests were no longer intent upon their service at the altar. despising the sanctuary and neglecting the sacrifices, they hurry to take part in the unlawful proceedings in the wrestling arena after the signal for the discus throwing, disdaining the honors prized by their ancestors and putting the highest value upon Greek forms of prestige. So once this gymnasium was finished, not very far from the temple, there would have been signals throughout the day as to what event was getting ready to happen next. And apparently, some of the priests and Levites were so into this new Greek thing that once they heard the signal, they abandoned whatever it was they were doing as priests and Levites in the temple complex and ran off to the gymnasium, either to watch or participate. And so we've got the religion of the Jewish people being minimized already by the Jewish people themselves because they want to be more Greek and to do Greek things. So the writer of 2 Maccabees, who always has very strong commentary about religious matters, actually says this: "For this reason, heavy disaster overtook them, and those whose ways of living they admired, that would be the Greeks, and wished to imitate completely, became their enemies and punished them. It is no light thing to show irreverence to the divine laws, a fact that later events will make clear." So basically, the writer of 2 Maccabees says, and they got what was coming to them, because those same Greeks turned around and started punishing the Jewish people as a whole at God's direction of judgment. So that's what's going on in the 170s BC at Jerusalem. Then in 171, this Hellenizing high priest Jason sends his annual bribe money to King Antiochus through an envoy. And this envoy decides that he really wants to be the high priest instead. And so he outbids his boss and becomes the new Jewish high priest. This guy we're going to know by the name Menelaus. And he continues at a pace the Hellenization of the Jewish people. And this is all recorded in the Jewish history books that we've been looking at. And so things are looking bad for the Jewish people. Next, in about 170 BC, so only 5 years after he came to power, Antiochus IV decides that he wants to absorb the Macedonian or the Greek Empire of Egypt into his kingdom. So he wants to rule everything from Mesopotamia to the Nile. And so he invades Egypt and successfully takes almost all of it. The only thing left, really, is the capital city of Alexandria. And so he leaves probably in 169, I think, and goes back to Mesopotamia, or back to, Alexandria. Nope, we'll try that one more time. Back to Antioch in Syria. And then he gets apparently to rethinking everything. That maybe he should have taken the city of Alexandria after all, because that was where the Ptolemaic ruler was based. So if that Ptolemaic ruler remained in power in the large capital city of Alexandria, it was always possible for him to exert authority. So in apparently the spring of 168, Antiochus heads back to Egypt. And as he crosses into the Delta region, he is met by a Roman envoy. And at this point, I want to read to you from the Roman record of this event. It's from the Roman historian Livy. And it's from his writings about the history of the Roman Empire. And he writes this: about 4 miles from Alexandria, he was met by the Roman commissioners, to whom he gave a friendly greeting and held out his hand to Pompilius. So Antiochus sees these Romans at the edge of Alexandria territory, and he is friendly with them because, after all, he needs to be, since he's having to pay tribute money or war reparation money to them every single year. So you have to keep on good terms. And he reaches out his hand to shake the hand of the head guy, but the head guy doesn't shake his hand back. This is what happens instead. Pompilius, however, placed in his hand the tablets on which was written the decree of the Senate, and told him, first of all, to read that. So what had happened is that the Ptolemaic leader of Egypt had reached out to the Roman Senate and complained that his country was being overtaken by Antiochus IV, and that this was going to be a problem for Rome, since Rome depended heavily upon grain out of Egypt. So the Romans made a decree in their Senate against Antiochus to basically tell him, hey, you know how we told you to stay out of Asia Minor? Now you have to stay out of Egypt because you're causing trouble. And if you don't, we will take you down militarily. And so this is the rest of the story from Livy. It says, after reading through it, Antiochus said he would call his friends into council and consider what he ought to do. So he's playing for time. Pompilius, stern and imperious as ever, drew a circle round the king with the stick he was carrying and said, before you step out of that circle, give me a reply to lay before the Senate. Now, this is the place from which we get our saying, drawing a line in the sand. And so he had a line drawn in the sand around him, and he was told, no, you have to make your mind up before you cross that line. And so Antiochus is stuck because he knows he can't take on the Roman Republic militarily. And so he's going to have to abandon his dream of absorbing the Egyptian Ptolemaic Empire into his own. So it says, for a few moments he hesitated, astounded at such a peremptory order, and at last replied, I will do what the Senate thinks right. And not till then did Pompilius extend his hand to the king as a friend and an ally. And Antiochus evacuated Egypt at the appointed date. So Egypt is off the table for him now. Now you can appreciate he would not have been happy about this turn of events. Well, he gets even more unhappy when he gets news from Jerusalem. Because while Antiochus was making his play for Egypt, apparently there were supernatural events happening over the city of Jerusalem. In 2 Maccabees, it's reported that there's all these signs of warriors fighting in the sky above Jerusalem. We don't know exactly what was being seen other than what's recorded there. And I will admit to you, some of the things in 2 Maccabees I find quite fanciful. I think the person is given to believing in a lot of legends. I know of others that he's put in there that are direct contradictions of inspired information that we have. But something was definitely happening in the sky over the city. that the people understood to be supernatural. And so a rumor started flying around the city of Jerusalem that Antiochus had been killed. And this made all the religious Jews really excited. And they were hoping that maybe this was a good omen. But this also caused the former high priest, Jason, remember the first guy that was trying to Hellenize? It caused him to think that maybe in this power vacuum that was assumed to be happening, he could regain control as high priest. So there's fighting going on, hand-to-hand, house-to-house fighting going on inside the capital city between several different Jewish religious and, shall we say, non-religious factions. And tens of thousands of Jewish people are dead. And when Antiochus IV hears about this in Egypt, he feels that maybe the city is in revolt against him. So he returns to Jerusalem and brings it back under his physical control. And of course, people die in the process. Then he finally goes back to Antioch. And so all of that happens in 168 BC. And he plunders at least some material out of the temple at that time to help pay for his military costs at this time period. Because remember, he's still under pressure to pay the annual war preparation reparations for the Treaty of Apamea each year to the Romans. 167 BC has now rolled around. Now, we've only got a few minutes left, so we'll not get horribly far into what happened in the year 167. But this is part of it. I'm going to go back and forth between 2 Maccabees and 1 Maccabees, okay? It's 2 Maccabees 5, starting at verse 23, 1 Maccabees 1, starting at verse 29. And so this is the record that is found in those two books. In his malice toward the Jewish citizens, Antiochus sent Apollonius, the captain of the Mysians, with an army of 22,000 and commanded him to kill all the grown men and to sell the women and boys as slaves. So that's how the year started. Antiochus tells one of his captains, go down there, kill a whole bunch of the adults, the religious adults down there, and capture a bunch of the women and the boys for slavery sales. 1 Maccabees 1:29. 2 years later, that's the time we're talking about, the king sent the cities of Judah a chief collector of tribute, and he came to Jerusalem with a large force. That's Apollonius again. So we find out he's not just simply coming down there to execute a bunch of people and capture a bunch of other people. He also wants cash. He's coming down there to get money. Deceitfully, he spoke peaceable words to them, and they believed him. So he decides not to come with full military force to do the things that his boss told him to do. He pretends as if everything is okay. Now, the time of year that he's arriving is right around the Feast of Pentecost. Pentecost happens on a Sunday, and so the Sabbath before is a Jewish rest day. And it's usually very well attended by all the religious Jews. And so it's a peaceful day. It says, when this man arrived in Jerusalem, he pretended to be peacefully disposed and waited until the holy Sabbath day. Then, finding the Jews not at work, he ordered his troops to parade under arms. And he put to the sword all those who came out to see them, then rushed into the city with his armed warriors and killed great numbers of people. So this is the great Pentecost weekend massacre of 167 BC. Apollonius lines all his troopers up, makes them parade around, you know, kind of showing off, doing a little razzle-dazzle. And a bunch of the Jewish people, because they're on a day off, they come out to just kind of watch this spectacular thing happening. And as soon as a large enough group of them are out there, Apollonius attacks and does what his boss said, kills a bunch of the adults, starts capturing a bunch of the women and the kids, and goes into the city and starts plundering it. And we find out, timing-wise, that this matches the kickoff of the timing in Daniel chapter 12, verse number 11, the 1,290-day countdown from the disruption of the Jewish sacrifices until the restoration of them under Maccabee.